All right. Welcome to another edition of Shabbat Lounge. This is Matt.
And Jake here.
We appreciate you stopping along. And we, as always, we ask you to take a look at our website and blog. Everything can be found here. Pretty much everything.
Yeah, pretty much. You can get the links to all the places where we reside.
Yes. And so you can see some things that we've been up to. Just recently, we celebrated Sukkot. And we were under some different sukkahs.
Yes.
And so when we post content, we mirror it here. And we also put, there's every once in a while, we'll have PowerPoint slides that we make available that you can download and look at here. And then it just is kind of a catalog of all the different things from Facebook to podcast to Twitter, voicemail, YouTube. And we appreciate if you can like us, share this. Let somebody know. So, Jake, what are we doing?
Today, we're continuing the Blessings and Curses series that we started dealing with Ebal and Gerizim.
And so if you want to get caught up on those, if you're starting here, this is part three. So maybe you should go watch part one and two.
Right.
So just stop it now and go watch one and two because you'll be completely lost.
Right. We'll wait. Okay, I think they were able to do
this. Yes, they can. So I don't think you'll be completely lost, but you could, though.
But we're told there's important content in the first two.
That's right. So the first thing we were going to take a look at is Mr. Rob Skiba. You might have heard of him before.
If you're watching this, you've probably heard of Rob Skiba.
Yep. And he had a video back in 2016 about Mount Ebal, Mount Gerizim, Garden of Eden, Ephraim Awakening, and I think he calls this the Yahuwah Triangle, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And so you may have to turn down our sound on the TV.
Yeah, I will do that.
So
I guess I could just push the mute button.
Because they are standing as a witness 400 years later.
And so this is a clip from Staley that we're listening to here.
Yeah.
Half the tribes go on the other. And the tabernacle, the temple, the Ark of the Covenant is right dead center.
Right in the middle.
Because this is the exact place where Yahweh walked between the two halves.
Maybe we should have turned on closed captioning so we could see what he was saying.
Oh, I know what he's saying.
No.
Now it's a little more, a little harder.
Right. I think the deal is with Shechem. This is the part where Rob Skiba is talking.
Right. Now, yeah, it's definitely interesting, and I think we've made the inference earlier about how this seems like the same place where Abraham and that covenant was made.
Definitely there's a possibility, but I don't know. They don't really explain, and they can't quote book, chapter, verse where how they came up with this. I don't know if it comes from the Talmud or some other source, but I don't know. Something, you know, we kind of wanted to put it out there, something to think about.
These two scriptures right here. Because he's, you know, Jim's the one that made me aware of the idea that
that
could have been.
That's Psalm 66 and Psalm 108, 7.
Right.
With Abraham, you know, he put Abraham to sleep, and he walked between the covenant himself.
And they do make a pretty compelling case that it's a possibility in the way these mountains are split. And it also, I can't help but think of the Mount of Olives prophecy, that the Mount of Olives is going to be split in two, kind of like that.
So if you think about the idea that
Yeah, it's definitely interesting.
And I believe he probably walked through in all his glory. You know,
he put and then, sure, he goes on to talk about this
mountain range
is
one time,
potentially this the location of the Garden of Eden and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And so I highly recommend you check out that stuff if you've never watched it. And or if it's been a while since you watched it. It's definitely an interesting study. Anything else here?
Yeah, just so with the Garden of Eden thing, I guess the point is one mountain was the tree of life and the other mountain would be the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I know some people go with that. I don't necessarily ascribe to that because the garden is hidden from us and we wouldn't be able to get into it. Now I know there's dimensional differences and that kind of thing, but even so, if this was it, we wouldn't be able to get into it.
Right.
It's kind of where I fall on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. And then the next one, I have the scripture, and
yeah, we just went to the 60 verse 6 where he was talking about Elohim has spoken in his holiness. I will rejoice. I will divide Shechem and mete out the valley of Succoth. So he's talking about dividing Shechem, which is right there in between Ebal and Gerizim.
Mm-hmm. And then 67, he says, Gilead is mine and Manasseh is mine. Ephraim is also is the strength of mine head. Judah is my lawgiver. Moab is my washpot. Over Edom, I will cast out my shoe. Philistia triumph, though, because of me. So
there's a lot there.
Yes. Yes. And I'm thinking most of this, it's not a good thing.
I wouldn't want to be someone's washpot. No, that's for sure.
No, it doesn't sound pleasant.
And we saw the whole George Bush and the shoe tossing situation. Did so we? If someone's casting out his shoe at George Bush, well, if someone's casting out their shoe, as with what happened with George Bush.
Remember
he dodged them? Like he was like a ninja.
Oh, maybe.
It's like he knew they were coming.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, apparently the throwing the shoe is it's a thing. People don't. It means they don't like you.
Yeah, so, I haven't had many shoes thrown at me, so people must like me.
That's the case.
Mm-hmm. But in Psalm 60, verses 6, I think it's interesting about he's dividing Shechem and meeting out in the valley of Succoth.
Yeah.
All right, and then the city of Shechem is the place where Abraham first buys land. And Jacob comes there after meeting Esau, and it's in the area where Joseph is sent for his brothers. So kind of a lot of stuff happened in this area. Always has kind of been a big deal. Joshua entered here. Joshua's final speech occurs here. Joseph's bones. And then later, John 4, the woman at the well is basically in this same vicinity. And outside of Nablus, there is a place that says it's...
That's the well.
This is the well. So okay. When we talked about that before, you know, that's so hard for me to... I mean, I would imagine there's several of these, and everybody charges you $20 to go see the well.
Yeah.
One of them is probably right.
So, well, none of them.
Yes. And then Deuteronomy 28 and Joshua 8 parallel each other. And so where can we put that?
I think over there is good.
And then Deuteronomy 28:1, and it shall come to pass, it shall hearken diligently into the voice, if thou shall hearken diligently into the voice of Yahuwah, your Elohim, to observe and do all the commandments which I've commanded thee this day, that Elohim, yes, will set thee on high above all the nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come on thee and overtake thee, if thou shalt hearken unto the voice of Elohim thy God. Blessed shall be in the city, blessed shall be in the field. And so this is like, if you scroll on down, this is the blessings and the curses in Deuteronomy 28.
Right.
And so the first part of that, he's laying out blessings. And then in like 16 here, he starts laying out 15, 16, starts laying out the curses.
Right.
And he's doing this standing at Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim.
Yeah, and we talked about how you probably didn't want to be the guys on the other side, on the curses side, yelling out what the curses are going to be. And we looked at the different tribes and how they kind of kind of more leaned that direction.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who Bob is. Okay.
Poor Bob.
And then Joshua 8 is basically the same story, where they enter the land and they come between Mount Ebal and Gerizim. And then in 8, is it 8? I believe this, there it is. It's 8:30. Then Joshua built an altar for Yahuwah of Israel in Mount Ebal, and Moses, the servant of Elohim, commanded the children of Israel, as it's written in the book of law of Moses, an altar of whole stones. Why is that significant, Jake?
Well, because no man tool is supposed to come upon it.
Right. Uncut stones.
That's right.
So, which no man hath lift any iron, and then he offered thereon burnt offerings unto the Lord and sacrificed peace offerings. And he wrote on the stones a copy of the law of Moses. You think this is the Ten Commandments?
Probably. I mean, I think it'd be hard to write the Torah on some rocks. I mean, I know everyone wrote their Torah and everything, but, well, the priests would. But to write it on some rocks, that would take a while, I think.
Yes, that's some dedication.
Yeah.
It might take a few minutes.
Maybe they had better tools.
Maybe. So anyway, those are the kind of the two anchor passages. If you want to go learn more about this, you know, they both, it's just interesting. They both pretty much come to the same place,
mm-hmm.
and do very similar things here.
Yeah. I think it's real interesting too, that, it just kind of puts a cap on how dedicated Joshua was, in doing Yahweh's will. I mean, we just coming off of Sukkot,
mm-hmm.
and we know that from Nehemiah that they hadn't done Sukkot since the time of Joshua. So Joshua kept things going in the right direction when they entered the land. And then after that, things went downhill.
Yeah. Pretty quickly.
So this kind of puts that cap on it, that another thing that Joshua was doing correctly.
Joshua was a righteous dude. All right, and then this is a another little clip from, you know, these are actual scenes at the location. The
covenant that God made with Abraham, a tangible, touchable place. It's incredible as well to see the Tirzah Valley, the valley which many believe the children of Israel entered into, but then taking us to where we are right now. It's incredible to witness this mountain.
Oops.
Now you've done it.
Of the ceremony for maybe two centuries. We know about French archaeologists and British archaeologists that come here at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, and they're looking for the altar. They're looking for this important place because they know how important it is in the Bible. The problem is that they're not looking at the right place.
But he discusses how this altar was found, and they believe it to be the altar of Joshua.
Mount Ebal.
According to the archaeological evidence, because there are no uncut stones. And what about the bones? Then they find some of them.
They found bones there that were from clean animals. And then they found pottery and clay from the Israelites.
And the guy that found it was an atheist, didn't even really believe. So,
right. So it's pretty interesting. Little story these guys are telling here.
Suddenly they find this weird enclosure that we're in right now.
And those guys do a good job of telling the story, and you know, I recommend checking it out a little bit further. And then another place was this one. Jeff and Isaac, I'm not sure how you say
Karasenti?
Yep. And so this was from a channel called First Century Foundations.
There you go.
Right now we're standing on Mount Gerizim, the second highest mountain in Samaria, which is 2,643 feet above sea level.
Right.
Mount Gerizim, where we are right now, is associated with the blessings. Mount Ebal is associated with the curses.
Oh, from Deuteronomy.
Now,
so this guy kind of goes through some of the stuff we've been through, but talks about Ebal and Gerizim, and he's explaining it to this guy here. And
it definitely makes you want to go to these places live and check them out.
Yeah.
Because that definitely would add to the story if you were standing here, and especially stand there and read these passages from Deuteronomy and Joshua. It'd be powerful.
Yeah. Sounds like you're saying we need a green screen.
Yes, maybe so. And then some more references to it are Genesis 33:18.
And Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram and pitched his tent before the city. And he bought a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money.
All right. So you've got this, these scriptures backing up, you know, where he comes in and pitches a tent in the same area. And then Joshua 24:32, and the bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel brought up out of Egypt, buried they in Shechem in a parcel of ground where Jacob bought the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver. And it became the inheritance of the children of Joseph, which would be Ephraim and Manasseh.
Yes.
Which is also kind of ironic because his father secured land in the promised land at the death of Sarah.
Right.
So there's kind of a theme here. And then you were talking about this earlier about the two mountains. And you were saying it appears this one is a little shorter than this one, but in reality, this one is a little taller.
Yeah. Yeah, if this is coming in from the east, Ebal is going to be on the right, and Gerizim on the left. And so Ebal is the taller mountain, but it's just interesting the optical illusion, if you will. I think this, it appears like this Gerizim is a little closer in the picture.
Yeah, and it's definitely not by much, for sure. As we'll see in a minute.
It just gave me a second pause as to, like, are we actually looking at this the right way?
Yeah. So, through the ages, from Abraham, Jacob, Moses, Joshua, the pass at Shechem has been a gateway to the promised land. Everyone had to pass between the blessings and curses to enter, which is just kind of interesting. It kind of becomes the gateway to the promised land, if you will.
Yeah.
And every time they go through, they're literally these visual reminders going blessings and curses.
Yeah. And it seems interesting that it's, you know, as you're walking in, it's kind of you're agreeing that if you follow the rules here, then there's blessings. If you don't, there's curses. It's almost like you're signing a contract by walking in.
Like you're re-entering into the agreement. Well, and it's pretty crazy.
New covenant.
Yes. Renewed. It's pretty interesting if you think about it like that. And that Yahuwah from the beginning made this place and went, you know what? That's where we're going to walk. I'm going to make them walk through here. You know, I mean, he had it all planned out. He knew this. It's not like it was a surprise. Oh, well, shucks, where are we going to bring them in? So he knew from the beginning.
Right. That's why, when you look at the map of the way they came in the Exodus, it doesn't make any sense for them to come in from the east.
I know.
But
as a kid, I always thought they just came right up.
Yeah.
And then later you're like, whoa, what did they mean that?
Yeah.
Which also leads more credibility to the Mount Sinai being in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And, you know, if they're over there anyway.
Yeah.
So you can't be neutral at the bottom of the valley. You gotta choose. You gotta, you know, either choose blessings or curses. You know, all of us are going to pick one. And to me, this goes back to another theme. So a theme is equally large in the Torah and the Bible is the theme of the wedding, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
Another theme is this idea of Jacob, Esau, Cain, Abel. And that's a very strong thread. And that's what this is part of the same thing. So Jacob was about his father's business and was blessed. And Esau was about the flesh and was cursed.
Right.
Same thing with Cain and Abel.
Yeah. And the hot and cold that he talks about in Revelation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can't be in the middle.
The mushy middle.
And then Joshua 24:15-16, will you read that?
And if it seem evil unto you to serve Yahweh, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh. And the people answered and said, Elohim forbid that we should forsake Yahweh to serve other gods. Little did they know.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think the father was doing when they said this?
It's almost like will you take this Elohim to mm-hmm. be your lawfully wedded idea?
Yes.
It's mm-hmm. almost like that.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if the father's looking down at them going, that's cute and all, but I know what you're fixing to do.
Yeah.
It's a nice try. I like it, but.
And it's good for, you know, Joshua giving him the what for. Like, you guys do what you want to do, but we're doing this.
Yeah, and think about how often this scripture is quoted by mainstream Christianity.
Yeah.
And they have no idea the context that what's being said here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just like, oh, that's cool, you know, but they don't understand he's talking about doing the Torah.
Yeah.
And then it made me think of the great chasm that we see in Luke 16. In Luke 16, 19 through 31, there was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate full of sores, and desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores, and it came to pass that the beggar died, and he was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried, and in hell he lifted up his eyes, being in torments, and seeth Abraham far off and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in the water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented by this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in the lifetime received good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now is comforted, and thou art tormented. And besides all this, between us and you, there's a great gulf that's fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from thence. And then he said, I pray thee, therefore, Father, that thou wouldest send him to my father's house. For I have five brethren that may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said unto them, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, Nay, Father Abraham, but if one went and to them from the dead, they will repent. And he said unto them, if they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. So
it's so painful. It's so painful, man.
It's painful. Why is it painful?
I mean, the torment. The torment's painful.
Yes.
No, it's painful because once you see it, you can't unsee it, mm-hmm. and you can't make someone else see it somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just unseeable. I think that's why he says it's impossible for those who see it and mm-hmm. fall to be. Anyway, that's a different topic. But point being, yeah, there's this chasm that's separating one that's being blessed and one that's being cursed.
Yeah, yeah, it seems like the chasm between the two mountains.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying, and I never really caught it till I read it there about it's so clear. This is Yeshua speaking, and he's basically saying, if they won't listen to Moses and the prophets, you know, okay, there's no point in going any further, which is kind of interesting because yeah. we lift up everything else and the new, we have traditionally lifted the New Testament so much higher than the Old Testament, and Yeshua's kind of saying the opposite here. He's clearly giving credit to this and not taking away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about, what you can't unsee?
Yeah, yeah, because I see this get twisted so much with, I mean, when you read it out loud and you're hearing it, mm-hmm. it's like, obviously, they have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. Don't you from the dead go back and tell them of what's going on. Moses and the prophets already did that.
Yeah. And if they won't listen to them, why are they going to listen to you?
Yeah. And if one went unto them from the dead, well, that would be a sin. If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded by the one who rose, though one rose from the dead. Talking about himself, he's going to rise from the dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to listen to him either because they don't even listen to Moses and the prophets. Because what's Yeshua telling them? He's not telling them anything different than what Moses and the prophets told them.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that's why they're not going to listen to him either. Because mm-hmm. they've already not listened to that message.
Yeah, no, that's good. And then that's where we're going to end.
Yeah, so that's
this part here, I believe. So, and we've gone through 74 slides in all. So if you missed something here, we encourage you to go back and listen to part one, part two. We try to divide this up in little sound bites to make it a little more palatable.
Yeah.
For your viewing pleasure. So anything else you want to say about Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim?
I think we covered a lot of things, especially when you go back and look at the whole thing as a whole. But there's a lot more there than you may initially think when you're just reading through and you get to Deuteronomy 28 and you're like, Ebal and Gerizim, blessing and curses. But I mean, that's the same with all this stuff. The more you look into it, the more you see that it's part of a whole.
Yeah, yeah. And as always, we just tell you to search your scriptures.
Yep.
Look at the text. Read it.
The answers are in there.
Yeah. Study it. You know, hunger and thirst for his righteousness. He does tell us if we seek, we're going to find it.
Yeah.
And that feels like the path we're on, definitely. And the more we seek, the more we find.
Right.
And we do think it's important to pay attention to these moedims, or these times he set apart, which includes the Sabbath. And when we set aside these times, you know, it's amazing. I don't know about you, Jake, but amazing how many times I set aside time to study on the Sabbath and I walk away with a lot of understanding.
Right.
And I think there's something to, we set that time aside for him, and he meets with us.
Yeah.
So.
And he blesses it, you could say.
Yeah, definitely. Well, as always, we appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to listen to chuckleheads like us.
That's right.
So, and we don't try to claim to know everything or to you know, be the absolute expert on all things Torah, but we're just students trying to learn, and we're hoping to help you along the way as we learn things. So, so stay tuned for other topics, and please like, share, and let other people know about us. And thank you for listening to Shabbat Lounge.
See ya.
Bye.